The rain grew harder, denser, louder. It pounded against windows, drummed against streets, flooded garages. Curtains of it rained down on the golf courses, swimming pools, and highways in and around Seven Springs, causing whiteout conditions and minor traffic accidents. Another thread of lightning shocked the dark gray sky, causing a boom so loud it rattled the windows of houses and tripped the alarm sensors on a half dozen parked cars. Still, smoke poured through the broken seals of the little yellow house where the old woman had lived and died. Darker now. Several blocks away, a man stood in his backyard with a shovel, sweating, though the rain had made it cool. He began to dig a hole. Amy. From the height and distance of the highway overpass, Amy saw the smoke as a trick of the eye. A string of thermals reaching down to lick the rooftops, a brush fire that appeared closer than it was. That it was something else entirely occurred to her only as she exited the highway and drove north. The closer she got to home, the larger the plume appeared, dark and thick and dangerous looking. She kept expecting to turn and realize it was down some other street, that it had arranged itself over some other house. But she made a left, and it grew closer. A right, and it was closer still. Amy felt her arms and legs grow heavy. She made her final right, and drove toward it. At the lip of her driveway, Amy stopped and watched the smoke rise steadily over her house. "Fuck!" she said, and threw her car into park. Amy ran toward the house, thinking of her cat who would have burrowed deep into the bed covers, and of her husband, who would blame her no matter what. She touched the doorknob cautiously, afraid that it would be hot. When it wasn't, Amy swung open the door, prepared for a shock. But the house was just as she'd left it. Breakfast dishes in the sink, a basket of laundry by the door. No smoke. "I'm going crazy," she whispered, and believed it until she walked through the house and out the back door. There she saw it, smoke gray as lead, coming from every hole and seam and crack of her neighbor's tiny, perfect yellow house. Briefly, Amy was dazzled by it. The dreamscape of color, the weightlessness of smoke. She imagined the plume as a hot air balloon that would carry the house away, and nearly closed her eyes to wish that that something extraordinary would happen. Then there were sirens, deep and mournful. She let out a breath. Back inside, Amy thought briefly about getting her camera or sketchpad to capture the scene. Some version of her would have. But this version, the woman who lived alone on Southwest 8th, opened a screw-top bottle of wine and carried a cigarette outside. There she took in the details of the evening calamity, the dark gray of smoke against the deeply bruised purple horizon, the deep orange blossoms of her royal poinciana standing in for flames. Amy thought of the difference between the true gray of smoke versus the blue gray of the evening sky. Then of the woman who lived there, whose hair was gray, and skin sometimes too. She had once given Amy an armload of mangoes from her tree, and Amy had eaten them all in a single sitting, unable to stop after one. She'd stood at the kitchen sink and eaten one mango after another, letting the juice run over her hands and face, the front of her t-shirt, the kitchen floor. By the time Pete arrived home, she was sick from sugar and covered in sticky pink syrup. He stood in the doorway staring at her, his white Oxford and loosened tie in stark contrast to her concert t-shirt made sticky by the binge.
"What the hell did you do?" he asked.
Mangoes,
she said finally, not sure what else to say.
"Jesus, Amy," he said, downshifting into exasperation. "Clean it up."
Just thinking of it, Amy could feel the heady ringing of sugar.